Hello, it's Wednesday 22nd of July. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bowerman from Check-in Asia.
Today we assess the fear and anxiety factor and ask whether traveller uncertainty will hold back the travel recovery in Southeast Asia.
Yes, efforts to reboot travel are not proving universally popular across the region. So, let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. So, a couple of weeks ago, we discussed the six primary factors that we thought were holding back the revival of travel and tourism, both here in Southeast Asia and worldwide.
Yes, to quickly recap, those six factors were, number one, the coronavirus itself, number two, government border closures and travel bans, number three, economic uncertainty, number four, consumer sentiment and the travel fear factor, number five, reduced travel industry operational capacity, and number six, the new marketing challenge.
So to date, we're zoning in on just one of those pressure points, consumer sentiment and the travel fear factor, and how that's impacting not only domestic tourism, but also shaping attitudes towards border reopenings and the prospects for inbound and outbound travel.
Yeah, and given the sustained pandemic era that we're experiencing, these six inhibiting factors tend to overlap. So as we discuss fear in travel, we'll likely reference those other causal influences as well. So, Hannah, to kickstart, let's take a look at some flight bookings data and comments posted online yesterday by Victor Vieira dos Santos, who's the marketing director at Embraer, the Brazilian jet maker based in Singapore. Now, these show the booking trends from January through to July this year, and the figures are pretty staggering, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. So, I mean, we're looking at bookings down by 90% to places like Bangkok and Jakarta, Singapore 91%. We've got places like Manila just 76%, hey? Just.
Yeah. And it's across the region. You look at Taipei, it's minus 94%, Sydney minus 82%. Now, of course, these are consolidated across the whole first 7 months of the year. Mm-hmm. So obviously there were huge down periods that are impacting that. But when you look at that as a general figure for the first, as we say, 7 months of the year, it's pretty daunting.
It is. I mean, the only bright side in there is Ho Chi Minh, which is just minus 6%.
Yeah.
But that really shows you everywhere in Asia is just seriously impacted and flight levels are really not returning back to normal.
Yeah. To accompany those figures, Mr. Vieira dos Santos remarked, and these comments are quite poignant. He said, regardless the stage of the infection curve, consumer sentiment remains persistently downbeat everywhere. Confidence is still down, exerting a massive drag on the recovery, even in countries emerging from the stasis engendered by containment measures, with an apparent feeling that the corner has been turned. Now, he notes that there are some bright spots emerging as airlines are adding more seats to their flight schedules, but he says that normalcy is certainly not on the horizon, adding that the gap between capacity recovery and consumer fearfulness is evident.
Mm.
This is a clear mismatch between what the industry hopes for and what will be achieved as demand has dried up.
Yeah, I like that mismatch. But, I mean, that is quite a depressing overview. So let's dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah. Particularly from an aircraft maker.
Oh, can you imagine? Yeah. Let's dig a bit deeper and look at those reasons behind this COVID-related travel fear in Southeast Asia. Of course, the first one has to be this resurgence of COVID-19 itself, you know, particularly in destinations that we already thought of as COVID-free. We have infections in Japan rising again, don't we? So they've risen tenfold in the month after domestic travel restrictions were lifted, to the point now where they're even thinking about, should we even carry on with this domestic tourism promotion that we've been planning, right?
Yeah, and consumer sentiment, which we'll come to in a minute, is really against that.
Mm.
You look at Hong Kong as well, which seemed to be relatively COVID safe, had done really great work in actually containing the virus. And now the terminology being used there is of a third wave.
Yes.
You know, the infections are rising. I think there were two deaths yesterday.
Mm.
Even the Hong Kong government has said that the medical facilities are struggling right now because, again, once this wave has come back, it's affected sentiment and people fear that they're getting sick.
Yeah. Australia, of course, we have the lockdown in Melbourne. Had that resurgence of cases in Beijing, you know, the 335 cases, more than 300 of which were hospitalized. So again, that's a scary number, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I think the Beijing outbreak caused fear across China because it had come back. Obviously, it was the capital, so there's a sort of that psychological factor.
Yes.
And I think, as we've said before, that resonated across Southeast Asia as well, because you know, everybody is looking for the Chinese market to come back. It looked like it was virus-free.
Mm-hmm.
And that showed just how resilient this virus is.
Yeah. Of course, Indonesia and Philippines in Southeast Asia, I mean, it's not really a resurgence there, is it? They're still trying to handle the first wave. And you've got countries like India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, who are again kind of struggling to contain this.
Yeah, you mentioned those three countries in Southeast Asia, and I looked at the figures yesterday, and they're all, you know, those two countries are hitting sort of milestones. So Indonesia is on the cusp of having 90,000 cases. Wow. Philippines is on the cusp of having 70,000 cases. Singapore is on the cusp of having 50,000 cases.
Yeah.
Now, the difference with Singapore is it has a very low number of active cases
and
obviously a very low death rate.
Yeah.
But in terms of the actual number of cases, if you'd have gone back 6 months and said that, you know, Singapore will have 50,000 cases, the way that it started to handle it at the beginning, you'd be very surprised.
You would, absolutely, absolutely. You've also got these long-haul inbound source markets to Southeast Asia who are, again, really struggling to contain it. I mean, I think the US is one of the great examples right now where it's frightening when you look at the news. Even markets like the UK, which are opening back up for travel, at least within the EU, still not really contained to the virus.
No.
And so there's that worry that even the long-haul markets don't have it under control, do they? You've got spikes in Germany, a new lockdown in Barcelona.
Germany is another case where, you know, it throughout most of the pandemic, it's been praised for actually, particularly its testing and tracing regime. It's managed to keep the numbers quite low. But again, these spikes are coming back, and you do worry with the EU summer openings to travel that this is going to spark more fear and more cases potentially.
Yeah. But I suppose on the other hand, actually, if there isn't this resurgent in cases, maybe that will go the other way, won't it? Maybe people will then feel more confident about travel in general because they'll say, okay, well, domestic tourism was open in the EU and they managed to contain it pretty well and there wasn't this massive second wave that everybody expected.
Absolutely. Right? Glass half full versus glass half empty.
Yeah, I mean, an interesting tracker that I tend to look at on a weekly basis is run by YouGov. And this is something they've done from right at the start, looking at people's fear of catching COVID and how afraid they are. So about every 2 weeks, they're asking these control groups around the world. And what's quite interesting, actually, is when you look at Southeast Asian numbers, Thailand, and this was the last date for this was July the 10th. So this is before this kind of Rayong case that we're going to talk about later and this rogue case of COVID-19 getting out in the community. But before that, Thailand actually had one of the lowest levels of fear of catching COVID in Southeast Asia. So they had about 59% of people who were either very or somewhat afraid that they would catch COVID. Actually, other countries like Vietnam, which is a country that we really think of as having the virus completely under control, there is no real social distancing there right now, their fear is 77%. And so they're actually a lot higher than Thailand, despite the fact that the government really have the situation under control. And Vietnam was also one of the countries that peaked the highest. So their fear peaked at about 90%. Whereas some of the other countries just hovered around 80%.
Yeah.
So even within Southeast Asia, there's this really disparate kind of rate of fear. Even that doesn't even seem to go hand in hand with how well the virus has been handled, right? There's no kind of logical link. Vietnam, who's really got it under control, they're still really afraid.
Yeah, which leads us nicely into our next point. So we've looked there at the resurgence or even the resilience of the virus.
Mm.
And the second point is societal factors and everyday living, which are feeding into this fear factor.
Yep.
Now, as you said there, Hannah, you know, there's a difference across the region in terms of the impact and the recovery rates of different countries.
Yeah.
But some things remain the same. So across the region, you know, some restrictions are still in place on our daily living.
Mm-hmm.
On our movements,
yeah.
You know, there aren't so many actual strict lockdowns anymore, but there are still methods in place.
Yeah.
Mask wearing is pretty common across the region.
Yes.
Social distancing
is
pretty much universal
mm-hmm.
in our region and around the world. In some countries, schools, universities, offices are slowly reopening.
Yeah.
Nightlife in some countries is still closed down.
Yes.
Particularly here in Malaysia, government offices are still closed in some cases.
Yes.
So you have those issues that are feeding into this fact, well, we're not back to normal yet. And you can understand how travellers think, well, You know, if government offices aren't open, if schools are only slightly open, universities may not be open for the rest of the year. You know, that just feeds into this fact that life hasn't returned to normal, however much we pretend that it's getting that way.
That's true.
And there's a general social nervousness, I think, particularly about flying, taking trains, buses, even getting into elevators.
Yeah.
You know, you do see caution. People are still keeping their distance. And this is perhaps a fact of life that we'll have to deal with for a long time. The common phrase is until there's a vaccine. But even so, maybe attitudes have changed towards interaction and distancing. Yeah. And this obviously is going to impact travel booking.
Absolutely. And I think another thing that is really affecting this is about the language that we are using and the language surrounding COVID-19, because it's all pretty negative, isn't it? We're talking about bans, we're talking about closures, we're talking about quarantines, social distancing, second, third wave, fourth wave, you know, all of this. And that doesn't help either when you're constantly reading this kind of negative wording in the news, talking about it with friends and family. I think it doesn't help with that fear. And even if the country is in a better situation, you know, for example, like we're saying, Vietnam's pretty much under control. Even Bangkok is really, you know, Thailand is pretty much under control. Malaysia is really. But there is still this fear of people that you're just constantly reading in the local media, and that doesn't really help to engender any confidence.
No, I agree. And I think also phrases and words that are essentially quite well-meaning actually can be turned negative. So this phrase clusters has sort of has emerged into the sort of vernacular in the last sort of couple of months, I guess, in Singapore, particularly in Malaysia here. So you have these cluster outbreaks, which the use of clusters was to try and highlight the fact that they're quite small, they're quite localized, and that they probably aren't likely, unless things go badly wrong, to go much further.
True, yeah.
But this term clusters has just been turned as a negative. Well, we have clusters in our country, so therefore that's a bad thing.
Mm.
Which, you know, you can actually read, that's reasonable interpretation of the clusters. But it just shows how the terminology is really actually feeding into the anxiety that everybody's feeling.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I mean, because in theory, the cluster, at least you know they're all from one place, right? You can trace them, you can track them.
Yeah.
Actually, clusters should be something that people feel a little bit happier about rather than random cases springing up all over the country and you've no idea what the links are or where they got it from.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned in the podcast last week, you know, hotels, destinations and airlines are still promoting clean, safe and trusted. You know, and these are terms which don't really engender positivity.
No.
They are not positive terms. They are, I know, sticking plasters over a gaping wound in many ways.
Yes.
And I noticed this week, I think Oyo Hotels in India has partnered with Unilever, and they're now calling their new program Sanitized Stays. Again, Sanitized Stays?
No, that doesn't sound like fun, does it?
No. I mean, they're putting hygiene kits into guest rooms for guests to use. I think they're also providing extra equipment for hotel staff. So again, it's well-meaning and it's understandable that those protocols have to be taken seriously.
Yes.
But just the term.
Yeah.
Sanitized stays. No. It's very medical. It sounds very medical.
No, it doesn't have that kind of holiday vibe about it, does it?
No. But on an uplift, Hannah, there was, you know, the news this week from Oxford and China, the vaccine trials do seem to be promoting a reaction, an antibody reaction against the virus. That's positive news. That's probably the best piece of news the travel industry has had for a long time.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't know when these will be able to go into production. They're still in clinical trial stage.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once the production and distribution, that's a whole other issue. But the fact that there is actually scientific work being done that seems to be proving positive made me smile anyway.
No, it made me smile too, of course. Yeah, no, that can only be a good thing. And, you know, I meet so many agents who are all saying, we think customers will travel once a vaccine has been found. So this could be that, you know, that final vaccine.
It could be, you're absolutely right. It could be that inflection point that turns anxiety and fear into, you know, realistic, well, there is light here. You know, that hopefully there is a positive outcome to this after so many long, dark months.
Gosh, let's hope
so. Which I think is another factor feeding into the negativity is just how long this has gone on for. If you go back to, you know, I think it was the end of December when those first cases were found in Wuhan and then the dark winters of lockdowns and you know, horrible numbers of deaths around the world.
Yeah.
It did seem like it was going to endure for a long time. But now we've moved, you know, almost into August.
Yeah.
I guess there is this feeling, well, how long will this actually endure for? Will it last, you know, into 2021, 2022?
Yeah, exactly. And when you've, I think when you're in that kind of mindset, you feel like you don't want to make anything worse. You've already been under that lockdown. So you think about, oh, if I let tourists in, not that it's your decision, but let's say if we let tourists in, and then it spreads again, I'm going to have to go back into lockdown. So maybe my life is just better with these kind of restrictions. Yes, okay, our tourism business has not got money, but at least I have personal freedom and I can go outside or my children can go to school.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that that's playing into it, isn't it?
Yeah. Hold that thought, because we'll come back to that in a minute. So those are the overarching factors that are contributing to the very palpable fear and anxiety about travel that, that we're feeling, we're seeing, and, and we're talking about. So let's look at some of the sort of COVID fear examples that have happened across Southeast Asia region recently. And one that we picked up from Cambodia is this returnee issue, Hannah.
Yes, exactly. So you wrote earlier this week, there's this latest twist in the seemingly never-ending COVID-19 travel downturn is a fear of imported infections via returnees from overseas, some of whom are transiting in other Southeast Asian countries. And that's definitely the case. You're seeing, you know, news stories being featured in Cambodia about having to be on a high alert because COVID-19 positive students are returning from over abroad. You have things like escapees from quarantine. I saw another, that there was one in the Cambodian news, again, about, I think she was a Cambodian American who fled quarantine and she was turned up. I saw another news article yesterday in Malaysian press about somebody else who'd gone, and I think he'd just gone out to a local restaurant whilst he was meant to be under quarantine, and someone snapped a picture of him and he was wearing his quarantine band. And these kind of things do not promote confidence, do they?
They don't. And there's a wider issue as well. I mean, those, you mentioned the sort of escapees from the quarantine centres, but regarding those students that came back to Cambodia, I think they were, in one case, there were 80 Cambodian students that returned from Saudi Arabia. I'm not sure if they were all studying in Saudi Arabia, but they were on a flight back from Saudi Arabia. And 25 of them, when they arrived in Cambodia, tested positive. Now, this is a little bit concerning. This is a broader issue. This is about how people are actually being allowed onto flights that they have the virus.
Yeah.
That's not what we were promised.
Yeah, exactly, right? Everybody will have to take a test before they take a flight. They have to take a test on arrival. But are some of these countries just deciding to, you know, put these foreign residents back on planes to where they came from, and it's somebody else's problem, maybe.
It is, but then, you know, also you probably have crew on board that plane.
Yes.
You're endangering them. It seems a strange decision not to be testing people on all flights, really. You know, that's the standard operating procedure we were told was going to happen, and most airlines and most airports are saying this will happen.
Yes.
But there are loopholes, clearly.
Definitely, it seems to be that way. And I think that there's those loopholes that are making people worried. And that probably leads nicely on to our next example of what's happening with the fear factor in Thailand, which is this, I think we touched on it last week, didn't we, on our Friday rewind about Rayong and how this Egyptian aircrew military officer managed to enter Thailand, I think, several times whilst being COVID-19 positive, because he was there under a military crew, so they didn't have to obey the same quarantine rules, or somehow he managed to kind of slip out. He was visiting shopping malls in Rayong.
And then there were also reports that he'd taken taxis, stayed in a hotel, visited a bar.
Yeah.
And this had a knock-on effect, didn't it? I mean, obviously, the bookings collapsed in Rayong.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also on one of the islands nearby, which I think is about 1.5 hour boat ride away, Koh Samet.
Yes.
Bookings collapsed there.
Yeah, even in Pattaya, which is still quite a distance away, bookings went down. And I think that really shows just how fragile these kind of incidents are to the psyche of travellers who are thinking about going. They're so easily spooked nowadays.
Yeah, I agree. And there were some nice comments by Anne Sonamas, who's the TTG Asia correspondent for Thailand. She's been writing some really thoughtful stuff about this in the past week or so. But she actually found some comments, I think it was on a radio station, from the spokesperson for Thailand's Center for COVID-19 Situation Administration.
Yeah.
Now, that doctor apologized for setting unrealistic expectations. And seeing that the panic and fear that ensued, followed by cancellations of almost 100% in trip bookings in many hotels in Rayong after that happened.
Yeah.
He then made some comments that we have set the wrong expectation by placing our emphasis on days free of cases of local transmission and counting the number of days that we have been COVID free. Now, that's quite interesting.
Yes.
We've been telling you every day that we have zero new cases. It's been over 50 days now free of local transmission, but with the level of COVID that there is in the world now, it's nearly impossible that we can make it to 100 days or 1,000 days with zero incidents. So from now on, we will stop counting and emphasizing this number. It's not paramount. We need to learn to live with COVID and coexist with the disease.
Yeah,
that's a different strategy, isn't it?
It is, and I think that this is so key, and I think that this really illustrates, you know, the kind of the different policies that governments have taken, right? Because when we all went into lockdown, and this is, I think, pretty much universal, it was about flattening the curve. It was not about eradicating COVID. It was about flattening the curve so that medical services weren't overwhelmed. And somewhere along the line, that narrative has changed, that goal has changed, and now it seems to be you need to be a COVID-free country. But, you know, like Dr. Tawi Slip is saying, actually, that goal is almost impossible. Yes, some countries are managing to maintain that at the moment. I think Vietnam is still maintaining it. Laos is still maintaining it in Southeast Asia. But how sustainable is that long term, particularly if you're opening up the borders? I think that now governments very much have to change track and have to be thinking about tracking and tracing and following those procedures much more strictly rather than shouting out about being COVID-free. And potentially then you need to also think about the same kind of criteria when you're thinking about opening up the country. Maybe it doesn't just have to be countries who are COVID-free. And I think Thailand itself said that they were looking for countries that were, how many days? I think, was it 30 days or 60 days COVID-free? I can't remember. It was in a past pod. They've changed so many times.
I think it's true. I agree with you. I think it's easy to be critical of government policies. But there's been a huge learning curve for scientists, for government organizations, for the travel industry, for every industry.
Yes.
This was the word that is always used. This is unprecedented.
Yeah.
But also not just in terms of the way that this has affected everybody's lives, the duration and the length and the scope and the depth and just the devastation that it's caused, but how to get out of this problem.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody, when we went into lockdowns, like, what was that, back in the beginning of March, anybody had any idea of what would happen post-lockdown.
Yeah,
it was basically a case of, as you said, drive the curve down, and then we take it from there.
Yes.
Understandable, really, because the priority then was just to stop people being hospitalized and dying.
Mm.
But the resilience of this virus is really testing governmental strategies.
Yes. So I think they're very right. It's how do we now coexist with this disease? How can tourism coexist with that too?
Which brings us on to our next point, which is about governments actually now dampening expectations. Now, we've seen that there in Thailand.
Mm.
And if we move into some other countries, Singapore and Malaysia in particular, we've seen cases of that this week. So let's look firstly at Singapore. And this week, the National Development Minister, Lawrence Wong, says that leisure travel may not be possible this year. He says our overall advisory remains for everyone in Singapore is not to travel, to avoid all travel.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that every outbound travel company who read that is based in Singapore, their hearts must have just dropped.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, is that
and pretty much every airline as well, because obviously Singapore being the hub that it is. Because he elaborated on those points. So he went even further.
Mm.
So he said the COVID-19 infection around the world is unlikely to go away. It's realistic, it's true, but you know, saying it from that viewpoint makes it sound even starker.
Mm.
At the end of the year, it will continue to be with us even until next year. He then added that although the green lanes are being added, there's one between Malaysia and Singapore being put in place, this is a phrase that will resonate. They are not just a free-for-all travel.
Mm.
People will have to abide by certain control measures and will have to have a very strict and controlled itinerary.
Yeah, I mean, I think he does go on and say, at least in the, I think he talks about the short term, leisure will not be
And he says it's a dynamic situation and it could change.
So let's hope that he is just being on the very much more pessimistic side. I mean, and if that's the case in Singapore, then the government will certainly have to think about other measures that they can take to support all of these outbound travel companies because they will collapse if nothing happens by my 2021. But this language does not help travellers or travel companies, I don't think. I mean, yes, you have to be realistic. And I think being a leader, you have to be realistic. But I don't know. I think you need to give some hope somewhere too. I don't know what you think, Gary.
I think I agree with you. I think it's very difficult for them to actually, you know, one of the things that the Singaporean government has done throughout this crisis is run a very good public information campaign. Mm. It is very good at speaking to the public.
Yes.
You know, there are questions about how it's actually handled the disease, particularly in the cases of the migrant workers. Yeah. But in terms of the way they've actually fronted up and talked to the public, to the population, it's unimpeachable, I think.
Mm.
And so I think at this point, he's really trying not to stoke expectations too much, to manage expectations. But, you know, there is that tipping point. Well, at what point are you just dampening them so much? Now, there is obviously this other element they're trying to support their hotels to get the staycation thing going.
Yeah.
So if you tell people that they won't be able to travel for some time, that is going to encourage them to book domestically as in stay in the hotel.
Very true.
So there may be something of that to it. But that's all we can say. I mean, I'm really not sure beyond that. But if you come up the peninsula to Malaysia,
yes.
We saw the Prime Minister this week using a similar tactic, although perhaps a little bit more stern.
Yeah,
he gave a public address earlier this week, which is his first for a few weeks, actually. Mm. And he was very stern. And the situation in Malaysia is very different. They have driven the curve right down. It was into single digits per day in terms of number of cases. And then this word cluster starting appearing again, and it's moved back up into the double digits. Now, the Prime Minister stood in front of the nation and made quite a strict address in terms of the fact that he was worried that people are becoming COVID complacent, that the lockdown was managed very, very well.
Yeah.
I mean, masks and social distancing has been adhered to throughout the whole time pretty well.
Yes.
But he was noticing that there is some laxity coming in and that some people are not wearing their masks at certain times, crowding into lifts, crowding into bars, crowding into places of congregation. And this was basically, he said, I thought it was actually quite a reasonable statement. Mm. He said that, you know, we've seen countries that thought that they were COVID safe and it does come back and we have to do everything not to do that. He made this, he implored the country that he does not want to go back into lockdown. He does not want to imperil the economy even further.
Yeah.
But he then placed responsibility on the people to do that.
Yeah.
He said, no, we have to step up game. He did also say that they may be looking at a law to make mask wearing mandatory.
Yes.
Which would be a step up, although, you know, most people do wear them here for fear of catching the virus.
Yeah.
He did also say that the borders won't be opened anytime soon, indefinitely. Mm. So this was really trying to use the fear factor to try and shake a little bit more discipline into the country. You know, in terms of the way that other leaders around the world have actually handled it, I think it was actually quite a sensible thing to do. But in terms of business, it doesn't send out the right message. Managing those two aspects is really difficult right now.
Yeah, it's all a balance, isn't it? It's a balance between the economy, a healthy economy or a healthy population.
Yeah, a healthy population, a healthier economy in the future. Can you balance that?
Mm. I mean, back to Thailand again. But the Thailand Development Research Institute came out with a statement saying that they think the rebound will be delayed until even after a vaccine has been found. So they're taking, again, quite a pessimistic view of the travel rebound. I think this hope for a V-shaped recovery is just completely gone out the window.
Yeah, and the Bank of Thailand said, I think yesterday or the day before, that this notion last year, Thailand attracted pretty much 40 million visitors and said for that to happen, it will take several years, even in a best case scenario, for that to happen again. And that's the central bank saying that. Then look at, well, you know, if there's this dampened idea, you look at the Philippines, who's trying to be upbeat about it. The Philippines having a very difficult situation with the virus. But this week, the Philippines Tourism Congress, the president, said that as the community quarantine marches into its fourth month, clients, both domestic and foreign tourists, are now antsy and want to resume normal routines like traveling.
Mm.
In listening to our partners overseas, the demand for the Philippines continues to be strong and interest remains high. We just really need to get our numbers under control. That's what international markets are looking for. Destinations that have a good grasp on how to deal with the pandemic. Is that masking over? Is that just being realistic? Is that just grasping
It's tough, isn't it? Because definitely, yes, I mean, travellers will be looking for destinations who have got the pandemic under control. And I think in reality, if you are one who has come out with a bad reputation during this or for mismanagement, then I think your chances for future tourists, at least in the short term, are definitely going to be dashed. So yes, Philippines does need to work on that. But the idea that tourists will come as soon as they've got it under control, or that's not really very realistic, I don't think, unfortunately. I mean, we've seen Vietnam, Laos, Thailand, Malaysia pretty much getting things under control. Are we still getting international tourists? No, it's still the border controls. It's still the government there deciding whether to open or not. So yes, it is about that destination getting in control, but actually it's almost about the world getting this under control, isn't it?
Absolutely true, because the oft-quoted phrase is that the chain of protection is only as strong as the weakest link.
Mm.
And, you know, wherever you have in our region weakest links, there is so much movement around our region, not just for travel or for tourism, but for business purposes. Mm. There's a lot of migration, anything there could bring this back.
And that brings us to our final factor, which is this fear of outsiders. And I think it would be interesting to see how much of a role actually the general public's fear has in shaping government policy, because we have places, back to Thailand again, we keep talking about Thailand, but they've had a lot happening. They conducted a poll last week post this whole incident, and now actually 94.5% of Thai people believe that foreigners should be banned from entering the company, like 94.5%. The week before, there was another poll, and that had only 41.4% of people strongly disagreeing to keep the borders open. So this fear factor has just shot up by over 50%. And the government, you know, ostensibly is still planning to open up to medical tourism, is still planning to open up to these elite cards. What will be interesting to see is actually, does the government decide to go ahead with those plans, or do they actually take into consideration this fear of the public of letting travellers in and decide that they're going to wait that until more confidence has come up?
Yeah, it's a good point. In Malaysia this week, the government also announced that returnees and also work permit holders will not be able to quarantine at home. They'll actually have to go into the official quarantine centres. That had been relaxed for a while.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is this fear that people coming from outside, whoever they are, whether they're actual nationals of the country who are returning or foreign nationals, you know, the virus could come with them. I think that is a big issue that's really starting to gain focus right now.
Yes.
But I thought I'd have a quick look at a country outside of our Southeast Asia, which is Japan.
Yes.
Obviously, this year they're in the middle of a second wave, particularly in Tokyo. And they should have had the Olympics this year, and that got cancelled to next year. I looked at a survey that's recently been conducted there. Only 23% of people polled in Japan want the delayed 2021 Tokyo Olympics to go ahead. Wow. Now, you could argue that's for the fear of outsiders coming into the country, but let's continue. So 36.4% of people said that they think that the Olympics should be held, but they should be postponed again, so perhaps to the next year. 33.7% said they should be cancelled forever. So again, that's the issue of outsiders coming into Japan primarily. But it goes a little bit further, because the Japanese government is now trying to introduce the Go to Travel campaign, which is a domestic tourism campaign, trying to promote domestic travel across Japan, although not in Tokyo.
Mm.
62.7% of people polled in Japan said they don't think that domestic travel campaign should go ahead.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? So it'll be really interesting to see how much the government is swayed by this public opinion, because potentially, you know, especially if they're facing an election, a re-election soon, you know, that kind of misstep could be disastrous, couldn't it? So I put out a question on LinkedIn just about fear factor, and we got some interesting responses. So Guillaume Luna de Diego, who's a front desk reservations and beverage supervisor based in Chiang Mai, Thailand, said, "I would say misinformation with the lack of coordination amongst governments are not helping travellers, neither going back home nor recovering travel industry trustability."
Yeah, Salome Villaflor, who's general manager at Ha Long Paradise Suites Hotel in Vietnam, says, "We've heard reports of people entering the country on special permits who tested positive, so it's indeed a big deterrent. The tourism recovery now depends on vaccine or cure. I've seen how SARS hit the industry before. Little did I know it was nothing but a walk in the park against COVID right now."
Yeah, I think a lot of travel industry professionals are feeling the same, right? They've had a lot of crises to face up against in this region. And Tim Russell, who's a Bangkok-based travel digital marketer, says the biggest problem is key overseas markets such as the US and UK not being willing or able to get their act together. Southeast Asia is pretty much ready to welcome visitors, but as long as certain countries refuse to deal with the virus, the borders won't reopen. So it's going back to that idea, isn't it, that it's actually not just a country-specific problem or a region-specific problem, actually it's a whole
world. It's a global problem. Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with that more. So, Hannah, that almost brings us to the end of this week's rather fearful edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
It does indeed. We hope you enjoyed the show. And as always, we'd love to hear your thoughts and insights on the challenges ahead in 2020 for the travel sector. So please send us a note by email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or via our Facebook page at the SEA Travel Show or on Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Also, we're enjoying the thoughtful comments and personal experiences you've been contributing to our LinkedIn page, the Southeast Asia Travel Show. So please keep those coming. Don't forget our Instagram page as well, at SEA Travel Show. And of course, you can catch up with all of our previous episodes on our website, theseasiatravelshow.com, and on both Spotify and Google Podcasts. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on both platforms.
And a quick reminder that our Friday mini briefing newsletter, which analyzes the real-time travel situation in a different Asian country each week. Last Friday was Taiwan, this week is Macau. You can sign up for free via our LinkedIn page or just send us a subscribe message via social media. Next week, Gary and I will be back with our usual midweek podcast and the second edition of our 15-minute Friday Rewind show.
Yeah, well, that's a wrap for this week's podcast. We're both off to drink a bucket of happy juice, and we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again very soon.